Welcome to a brand new episode of Bottom Line Baseball. I'm Alex Fuse, and right next to me is Jackson Ryan. Jackson, how are we doing today?
We're doing well. Just another week of spring training games and had some rule changes, so we'll discuss that coming along.
Absolutely, but this week's a little different for you. This week, you are turning 21, so what are you most looking forward to about your birthday week?
Well, I'll be going out to Vegas with my friends and a lot of family, and so I'm looking forward to watching March Madness this upcoming weekend, the start of that, and seeing a couple of different spring training games, but most importantly, just spending time with family and friends.
Have you made a bracket yet?
No. The brackets will be coming out soon, and will come out probably Tuesday or Wednesday since the tournament starts Thursday.
That's right. So exciting times for sports fans. College basketball is one of the most exciting times of year. Who do you think, obviously we don't know yet the brackets, but who do you think has the true advantage as of right now to win the tournament, in your opinion?
I don't know. I haven't really been paying this close attention to college basketball, but we'll see. You always got to find that sleeper team that'll win, you know, one or two games in the tournament. So
the underdogs.
Yeah, that's
I always go with the
difference.
Underdogs. I always go with the underdogs. The excitement, right? That's what March Madness is all about.
Yeah, for sure.
It's the the upsets, right? That's March Madness at its core.
No,
any team, any place, any time, you never know. So we'll get into the biggest news of the week. I guess before we get into the rule changes, on the broadcasting side, Matt Vasgersian is the new television voice of the LA Angels. Victor Rojas actually is now a president of a team down here in Texas, a minor league team. So he left the broadcast industry, and there was that opening. And Matty V is a new voice of the Angels. Exciting times for Angel fans.
No, yeah, for sure. Matt Vasgersian, being an MLB Network, obviously, you know, knows a ton about the game, and his voice is, you know, heard out throughout baseball. And so to have somebody like that come in into your organization and be a presence, and you know, okay, this is the person that is the voice of our team for the future, is exciting. And besides him, having Darren Sutton come along as well can only help.
I don't think Angel fans or even baseball fans are going to have to, especially now, like teams, when they make changes to the broadcast booth, there's that time period to get used to broadcasters. But Matt Vasgersian and Darren Sutton, baseball fans know those two, as those two are the voices of MLB The Show. So any true baseball fan already has an idea of who these two guys are and who they are as broadcasters. So there's already that excitement level for Angel fans.
And it's exciting for the Angel fans as well, because they got a chance to win their division this year. If their pitchers step up and get them over the hump, they have a really good shot at winning their division. You know, they'll be them, Houston, and Oakland most likely competing for that division. And you never know what can happen.
Mm-hmm. You know, I predicted the Angels are going to win the West, and I'm sticking to that. I truly do believe that they have a chance. And that division, like you said, is wide open. Those three teams can definitely, certainly move things around and upset some teams. So Matty V, the new voice of the Angels. And I think it should be noted, right, that Matt Vasgersian won't be, to my knowledge, ever actually calling an Angels game from Anaheim. He'll be calling the games from his home in New York City. So it's pretty cool for the Angels to sort of, again, there's pros and cons to everything being remotely right now for broadcasters, but they were able to go get a high-profile name to call those games, since he won't even have to move.
Yeah, no, and two, if broadcasting remotely, it's a little different because you're watching on the screen. And, you know, in some cases it can be harder to, you know, tell exactly what's going on or who you've talked to before the game, you know, players-wise or coaches and, you know, what's going on at the stadium actually. But it's a great addition for the Angels and, you know, a voice that is known well in the game.
So let's get into the rule changes that Major League Baseball are implementing throughout the minor league system. I'll briefly name off some of the biggest at the AAA level, larger bases, meaning that the actual bases are 15 inches right now, and then they will now be 18 inches long. And then in AA, defensive positioning restrictions, and that's across all AA teams. And high A, the step-off rule, which we'll get into a little bit more detail about, basically saying aimed at increasing the number of stolen base attempts. And then pickoff attempts limits all across low A baseball. And low A on the west side of the division, the pitch clock. Then we have robo umpires being implemented in low A west. So let's start off at the triple A level, the larger bases. Yay or nay? Are you a fan? Are you not?
Yeah, if it can help prevent, you know, injuries from not happening, then I am a fan. You know, it's not that big a difference to me to go from 15 to 18. You know, when right. I heard it at the beginning, I was thinking more like a softball type of deal where you'd have two bases, which, right. you know, that wouldn't make too much sense. But, mm-hmm. you know, if it helps prevent injuries, like Bryce Harper had an injury in 2017 at first base when it was wet and, you know, rainy outside, and it helps, you know, games even go longer than they, you know, should have happened before. For instance, you know, if the game gets played that day due to the bases actually, you know, being playable compared to not, can only be a plus.
Mm-hmm. And so the subtle increase in size provides more room for players to operate. And then also there's a more grippy surface on that will, I guess, perform, expected to perform better in wet conditions. And again, home plate will be the same size at the AAA level. I'm a fan, you know, and I think if you all listen back to the Bob Costas interview from last week, it should be interesting that these rules got announced after our interview with Bob. And what he brought up in there was basically saying how the side note, two things to this now. So Bob talked about the chances of stolen bases and teams just not wanting to do it, players not wanting to do it because of all the statistical evidence proves that it's just not worth the extra base or to bunt for the extra base. It's not worth it because of that split second replay review time. But this, in theory, again, it's not drastic. We're not going from 15 to 30 inches, right? It's only 3 inches difference, but it's that split second that Bob was mentioning that could potentially help. Second thing, players nowadays don't want to steal bases. Why? Because it affects their WAR. And if they get caught stealing, it takes their WAR and lowers it. And how we kind of look at number-wise, how contracts are formulated nowadays, WAR is a huge piece of contracts now. It's all those statistical numbers that teams are so reliant on across all Major League Baseball. So I think, too, it would help players if there's a better chance now for them to steal a base to raise their WAR now. It's going to automatically raise the chances and probability of stolen bases working to the advantage of the base runner.
And you may even see some more hit and runs and stealing hits and, you know, more first to third type of stuff, because you're always looking for, like we've talked about in the past, that 26th guy on the roster that comes in and steals a huge base for you. You're always looking for that extra 90 feet where you can get a runner in scoring position, because that hitter hits better with a runner on second with one out compared to a runner on first with one out. Or the matchup becomes different because then you have to walk the next guy to set up, the defense wants to set up a double play, but then in reality, the next hitter is going to hit well off a right-handed batter. So all the little things that most people don't talk about in the game could be a big difference with 3 inches.
Mm-hmm. This is the most drastic rule, in my opinion, in AA defensive positioning restrictions. The infielder will be a misnomer, as Major League Baseball wrote. In AA this year, the first baseman, second baseman, shortstop, and third baseman will all be required to have both feet completely in front of the outer infield dirt boundary when the pitch is delivered. Note that this is different from the oft-discussed idea of forcing teams to have two infielders on each side of the second base bag. Both of these rules we're talking about were implemented first in the Atlantic League experimentation. So I'm a fan, and I think this is the first time we've seen teams, or the league rather, look at potentially, quote-unquote, banning the shift.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in favor of the shift for guys that are Deadpool hitters, for instance, like the David Ortiz, the Albert Pujolses, you know. But when you get the guys that are 7, 8, 9 hole hitters that don't put the ball in play as much, where you have the guys that are like Mike Trout, Jose Altuve, you know, that are going to spray the ball everywhere, you know, to have a shift on doesn't really make that much a difference, because those guys are the best at what they do and they're going to put the ball where they want to put it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the shift I always thought was more for guys that were Deadpool hitters that were, you know, Ortiz is not a great example, but just an example that, you know, he hit more balls to the right side, where you'd put that second base over in mid right field and the shortstop over in the third base at the shortstop, you know, because you would rather give up a bunt single to a power hitter or a guy, you know, that puts the ball, that hits a lot of doubles and homers, and give up that RBI double or that 2-run home.
Mm-hmm. I think, look, I'm on the side where some people, the quote unquote traditionalists in the game, right, they say, don't touch anything. Leave it the way it is. But the other side of me doesn't want to see a 9-inning game go 4 hours long. And the game is not getting over any sooner these days. You know, we are seeing I just saw a high school game, and there was innings that were going almost 30 minutes, a half inning, like the top of the first, because the pitcher was taking his time on the mound. He had 5 or 6 checks over to first. That slows down the game of baseball. The whole shift idea, it doesn't really slow down the game, but it increases the action. So if you're giving more action implemented in the game, well, then it makes it more entertaining.
And also the three true outcomes don't help the pace of play either, meaning strikeout, homer, or walk. In today's game, there's so many guys that are three true outcome guys that don't put the ball in play. And when you're not putting the ball in play, there's no action for the fans, A. And B, you know, you're having long at bats. You're having those 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 pitch at bats. And, you know, those are a lot different than, you know, having a guy on 0-1 hit a single to the third, you know, to left field in between third base and shortstop, or ground the ball over to second base for an out. So getting guys to put the ball more in play, kind of like what Merrifield talked about, you know, having guys that needed to come in and, you know, that GMs need to pay for guys to put the ball in play, I think could change that as well. So
right.
If general managers were to focus more on, you know, I'm not talking about every hitter, but on certain guys that, you know, your 2-hole hitter, your, you know, 6, your 7-hole hitter to put the ball in play, it could help speed up the game.
You know, and a lot of people were saying, well, why don't you just do this either across all levels, this rule, or why not just at the AAA level? Like, why the AA level? Well, I think the biggest thing, and you can back me up on this, Jackson, AAA teams, that is the most transactional rate from Major League Baseball to AAA to AAA to Major League Baseball. So theoretically, if they were to implement this into the AAA play or rules, rather, then you're asking these players to really change their whole way of how to play the game. And then as soon as they get called up to Major League Baseball, you are asking them to now completely change, where you don't really see too many guys go from double A to major league level that constant. Yeah, it's going to happen. But at the same time, I think that's where it's so great that they're doing this at the double A level, where it's a high level of minor league baseball, but not so high where it really affects a player's strategy when they get called up.
And I'll say this about triple A too. It's kind of, I call it more the most frustrating level for some guys, because they're one step away from the big leagues, right? And, you know, some of them think they're better than guys. You have your, you know, major league veterans who are now going down because they've taken a step back. And so you have so many different guys at AAA, you know, that are either on the way up or on the way down, that, you know, it's hard for them to adjust. You know, I think if you really want to do things like what they're doing, you'd start in high A and low A with it even more, because then you're building it up through the whole system, mm-hmm. compared to even double A, because you have most guys, once you get to double A baseball, you're pretty good at what you do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, double A baseball, you have the guys, like you said, that will go to triple A, but also you'll have those guys who skip that level or go to the big leagues that are the top prospects of an organization. You know, you may have like the Spencer Torkelsons skip triple A to go to the big leagues. You may have different guys like that come up through the system where they're skipping that level. So I think if you start changing the game, you start at the lower levels and make your way up.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, just I guess the last point on the shift, you know, I said this to you yesterday. If you're asking a guy like Bryce Harper or a guy like a DJ LeMahieu, right, who was being shifted dramatically all throughout the league last year, they're going to be against the shift being banned, you would be out of your mind if you said that. Like, the shift, look at Jackie Bradley Jr.'s numbers. Before the shift really became popular, probably in the last 2 to 3 years, you look at his career numbers, it changed his whole career trajectory, where Jackie Bradley Jr. was able to kind of really build up his statistical, really great stats, right? If we're just basing it off his stats, he had a great first half of his career. I'm not saying anything against the last half, but again, his career trajectory, where he's now just signing in the last week or first week of spring training or second week. And I think, too, where it really just shifts your whole career trajectory, the shift, I don't think that many guys, if any, are going to be against it if you're not a pitcher.
No, I agree with that. I think most guys want to be able to get base hits, you know, that are base hits, right, mm-hmm. that are not shifted away. But also you have to change your approach, too, with the shift, you know. Not saying everybody can do it, but, you know, if you lay down a couple bunts or you think about going opposite way in batting practice or, you know, in sim games or on the backfields and you practice and practice and practice, then, you know, you're going to get better at spraying the ball all over the place.
Let me ask you this question. I might have misspoke with that, saying that no pitchers would disagree with a shift ban. But how many guys, I've seen it multiple times with pitchers, get frustrated that it's a ground ball to the shortstop and nobody's there.
Yeah, when it works, you don't hear any complaining. But when it doesn't work and there's an out on a regular, you know, ball at shortstop where it's a left-handed hitter, you know, and on the other side, you'll get pitchers that get frustrated.
So which is it? Like, do pitchers really – so, like, we talk about the shift affecting a guy's batting average or OPS or WAR or whatever, but – Is a shift overall affecting the game outcome versus the individual pitcher's stats?
I think that when you have a dominant, it goes back to dominant and starting pitching and dominant relief pitching. If that guy on the mound is dominant, the best hitters in the game, and Hall of Famers only get 3 hits out of 10 at bats, right. You know? So if you're having, you know, your number one or number two, you know, the shift probably doesn't make that much a difference. But when it's your 3, 4, 5, when it's your 3, 4, 5 pitchers in the rotation, it may make a difference in, you know, making sure that you end up winning that game versus losing. Because one game means a lot. And we've seen it in September when it comes down to the last playoff runs where those wild card teams are all, you know, 2-3 games within each other. And one game or one series can be the difference in that team going home and then playing in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. In high A, we have the step-off rule. So this change is aimed at increasing the number of stolen base attempts and perhaps a stolen base success rate by forcing pitchers to fully step off the rubber before attempting a pickoff, the move by left-handed pitchers like Andy Pettitte to raise the right knee up to delivery and then throw to first is eliminated. Snap throws followed by the first step off are prohibited. Again, this rule was also tested in the Atlantic League in 2019. So, are you a fan of this one?
Not really, because, you know, pitchers have been picking off so many different ways. And, you know, if they get called a balk, they get called a balk. But, you know, Andy Pettitte, who you brought up, probably had the best, you know, AKA balk move that, you know, everybody would say it was, you know, that was on the base pass, but he perfected it. And when you have a perfect or really good pickoff move, it really helps you get those runners off the bases. So, you know, that's going to be a change for those guys because you have to now step off and throw. And, you know, most guys are, you know, just using that quick switch to, you know, move their feet over and throw over to first base. So I feel like it affects more right-handed pitchers than it does left-handed pitchers.
How much do you think it could affect the running game of everything? Like, is this a move that if I'm not a stolen base guy, but I have speed, right? Is this a move that, man, like this helps me so much. Like, I'm just trying to understand where the, okay, this really makes it easier to steal a base. Like, how much does this rule affect the core?
It's going to make people, I think, steal more bases and have more steal attempts, because now they know that they could be, there could be called a balk. You know, the pitcher doesn't do the perfect, you know, pickoff move off the rubber. So I think there's going to be more steal attempts in the game, especially by leadoff hitters and nine-hole hitters that are mostly speed guys.
Mm-hmm. And I ask that because the next rule that we're going to talk about is the pitch clock rule. And when that first got announced, right, I remember having conversation with pitchers not to do it, to not implement this. I use the analogy of I was against it to begin with, because I use the analogy where it's like if you're at a restaurant and you say to the cook, hey, I want my hamburger quicker, well, the hamburger is going to be raw. And you can't really order a baseball game, a good one anyways, quicker. It's going to become sloppy. It's going to become raw. Not good. But now seeing the games and seeing pitchers as they come along throughout the college levels, and as you see it now being implemented at the college level, the games do, the pitchers kind of, okay, I'm aware of this. And now it's kind of built into their game day routine where you don't really see it becoming effective, meaning why the new pitch clock rule that's going to be implemented at the low A West side is pitchers have become so used to it or finding runarounds to the rule that they're now lowering it to 15 seconds instead of 20 seconds. So that's why I asked that question. Like, these rules that we're talking about, they may seem like they're, oh my gosh, out of this world, until we see like a year of it or two seasons of it being implemented, and it's really not that big of a deal.
And it's an experiment too. That's why you put it at the lower levels. They're all experiencing it. And, you know, players are going to be able to say, this is what I liked about it, this is what I didn't like about it. You know, same from coaches and managers' perspectives. And so, you know, if you listen to what they have to say, then, you know, you'll be able to implement what you want and what you don't. But that's why, like I said earlier, you start at the lower levels of it to get a feel for how it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we'll do, you know. And it's so funny. You see on Twitter with all the comments, oh my gosh, they're destroying the game of baseball, right? Well, the minor leagues, like you brought up, right? This is not the first year that they're experimenting rules. And 2 years ago when they first made their public announcement that they're making rule changes, this is not the first time in Major League Baseball history that they're experimenting rules in the minor leagues. They've been doing it for years. For years. Decades, they've been trying out new rules. And I, like I said at the beginning, I'm a fan of the game of baseball. And you look at the stats and the ratings are decreasing, right, in comparison to all the other leagues. And if increasing the bases by 3 inches make the game a little more entertaining, or making sure that the infielders are staying on the dirt and not shifting to the right field that increase the amount of hits are making the game entertaining, that bring in more fans, then I'm on board. I'm on board.
I would say, though, I feel like more we're losing viewership more because it's not as fun. You know, like I feel like if the game of baseball promoted the Fernando Tatis Juniors, the Mike Trouts, the Aaron Judges, the Jose Altuves, like, players that have been, you know, there and done it and are the superstars of the game, then, you know, and showed them, okay, this is a day in the life of this player. This is, right. You know, okay, we're doing autograph sessions here. We're going to do, you know, sign bats here. You know, for a broadcast perspective, like, you know, hey, having a kid call, you know, a game on the PA for three batters, right, and just saying who they are, right. You know, and I know with COVID it's not – going to be able to be possible now like it was, you know, a couple years ago. But, you know, I feel like more of it is getting more people to be in love with the game of baseball and to have fun, because it's one of the best games out there.
And I agree with that. The only thing I would say is like what Costa said, right? Like, the only reason why Ken Griffey Jr. and the Mariners saved baseball was because they had that moment where the Mariners-Yankees wild card game, right, from 95, like, they had that moment. So if these players don't have that moment, and if I'm not a fan of baseball, right? And I see a Fernando Tatis Jr. right now. Why should I care about Tatis? Like, oh, just because he's an energetic, entertaining player? Well, that's great. Well, how many championships has he won, right? Like, if Tom Brady would not be Tom Brady without the Super Bowl wins, right? Or Derek Jeter would not be Derek Jeter without the World Series wins. Michael Jordan would not be Michael Jordan without the wins, right? So if not only would chances of teams' chances increase by getting rid of the shift, right, to a World Series win to make games more competitive and to get away from that three outcome game that you're talking about, then that's where you create that excitement that isn't, or that, you know, fun atmosphere that you're talking about is missing. So I think that's where there's that kind of lack of what do teams do and what do players do when there only is to, because at this level, right, it's a job. As much as people hate to say it, at this level of, oh, it's your point, it's a job, right? This is a business. And if I'm the best player, if I have a power swing, and yeah, I can change my game to be more contact and stuff, but for me personally, if this is me and you're telling me, okay, Alex, go hit 40 home runs and hit 275 and get your money, right? Versus a hit 300, hit 15 home runs and get your 50% less money. Well, I'm going to hit more home runs, right? If you want me to be a home run hitter and you don't really hurt me by striking out, right? Then that's what I'm going to do.
And, but it kind of goes back to of what are the GMs and what are the owners paying the players for today, you know, and they're wanting more home runs and more, you know, walks and getting on base percentage up, right? With the three true outcomes of the walks and homers, you know, but like kind of what Merrifield said, if you go back to paying people to get on base, then it could be a little different.
I think there's just this miscommunication or just confusing aspect to where I feel like there's a side of the game of baseball that feel like home runs are what drive ratings, versus the other side is, no, it's small ball, it's the contact, excitement level baseball that drive ratings. I think there's that miscommunication where we think back to the home run chase, you know, the Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa,
Mark McGuire,
right? We look back to that time and we just think home runs, right? Mm-hmm. But yes and no, like those games are also just entertaining outside of the home runs. Like the games also have to be entertaining. I don't get entertained. It seemed like almost every single hit in the postseason in 2020 were home runs to me. It just felt like that almost every single run was scored by a home run. I turn it off. I'm like, I can't. It's not entertaining to me.
Also, when you have like guys like Cody Bellinger, you know, robbing homers and showing that excitement on the field, that can help out. But yeah. I kind of agree with you. You go back to, you know, when the home run chase was happening, and that was when baseball was cool again, you know, or when they had, like Bob said, with Ken Griffey Jr., it was cool. Or, mm-hmm. you know, another team that saved baseball back in 95 was the Cleveland Indians, because they had fans show up and, you know, this is how we do it thing rolling. And yeah, I mean, you just want to find that moment, but your team has to win. You know, like Bob said, the Mike Trouts and Fernando Tatis haven't had that moment yet. And, you know, we'll see what happens in the future.
I just think there's just that miscommunication, right, where home runs drive up ratings. And I just don't think that's true. Because if that's true, then why are they decreasing? Because the most home runs are being hit year in, year out these days, and the ratings are going down. So obviously, home runs are not the be-all and end-all to save baseball. It's so much more than that, and I hope that we get to the point where the game of baseball gets so much more focused on not just how many home runs are being hit.
No, yeah. I mean, you just got to find that balance, right? Because you want your 3, 4, 5 hitters hitting home runs, mm-hmm. you know? But you want guys, you know, there's the George Springers, there's the, you know, guys like that that are going to hit home runs out of leadoff spots. But you're also going to have the Juan Pierce that are, you know, putting the ball in place, setting the table. The Luis Castillo, who was with the Marlins, hitting in the two hole. And, you know, the Marlins team put the ball in play, and, you know, you had a couple errors with the Cubs in 2003, and that was the difference. And, you know, at the end of the day, it always comes back to, in playoffs, always comes back to pitching. If you have pitching, you're going to win. And if you have a dominant 1-2 and a really good number three guy, you're going to win. And if you have a setup and a closer, you're going to win a bunch of ball games.
And the last thing that we'll touch on here, low A Southeast robot umpires. I am not a fan at all. I think out of all these rule experiments that we talked about today, I think this is the one I never, ever want to see implemented at the major league level.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of robot umpires. You know, the game has always had umpires. You know, umpires are human, right? You had the guy, I can't remember, Jim Joyce, that, you know, blew the call. But, you know what, that's what for instant replay is for those type of calls, you know? But I always want there to be umpires because they're a part of the game and it's a part of baseball. And you know certain umpires, right? Whether they come out or, you know, or in the playoffs and you know them. And it's all about relationships, and those are jobs too. And those are not easy jobs because you could be in New York and then, you know, 3 days later you're across the country or you're in Texas or Kansas City or Minnesota or Milwaukee, you know, calling a game. And, you know, I feel like what we have now is a good situation, and replay I feel like is good for those, you know, obvious calls, but, you know, the ones where the guy is just off at the end is kind of a little crazy to me.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think, right, the strike zone is, and you know what's so funny, right? So we're talking about speeding up the game. So the idea is that there's going to be an umpire standing behind home that's wearing a headset, and what the headset is telling them whether it's ball or strike or not, and then he says, well, so there's what? Geez, probably close to 300 pitches in a game, right? Close to that. So now that's...
So where does framing, real quick, where does framing for a catcher go? Because framing used to be a big part of the game.
Right. Know, I mean, that's
some
gone.
Some of the better catchers,
it'd be gone.
You know, frame the ball like Pudge Rodriguez, or you would have,
gone.
You know, Salvador Perez. I mean, you have different guys that would be really good framers and, you know, guys that knew how to call a game too, because... You know, being able to call a really good game can only help, especially with the younger starting pitching staff. But, you know, there's no point in framing now if we're going to have robot umpires, because at the end of the day, it won't even matter.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, too, it's just going to be where it's a strike zone that's being, you know, adjusted to the player, right? But, like, how can you really make sure that it's accurate? You know, when you got – Jose Altuve batting leadoff, and then in the bottom of the first is Aaron Judge. Like, where does that difference, right? Like, how do you apply that to make sure it's accurate? Like, what if Judge is sitting more close in the box versus stepping
but
back?
But it's also 6-7 versus 5-6.
Right.
Like, where is the strike zone, you know? Because you're going to have a different strike zone. It's going to be a wider strike zone, you know, for guys that are taller. What I mean by that, you know, bigger than the guys that are, you know, not as big. But – it'll be very interesting to see how it works. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan of it, and I don't think you are either.
No, I'm not a fan at all. And like I said earlier, there's about roughly 300 pitches thrown in the game. And if you're taking 1 to 2 seconds every single pitch to make the call, whether it's a ball or strike or not, isn't that slowing the game down? So it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, why do it, like, just to do it? I understand it's experimenting, right? But it's kind of like, oh boy, now that they're, you know, this is the first time in history that the robot umpires is going to be implemented at the lower level of affiliated baseball. It's low A, Southeast, I believe that's the league. Yep, Southeast. And it's just like, I'm not a fan. Not a fan. So those are the biggest rule changes. I'm interested to see, though, it does say that the new experimental rules for the 2020 Atlantic League season will be announced in the coming weeks. I think if you were the – let me ask you this right on the spot, Jackson. If you were the Atlantic League GM, what rule would you implement to experiment this year?
Ooh, out of them all?
Well, I'm saying, like, so you're the Atlantic League, right? And you're announcing the Atlantic League. So the Atlantic League historically are the ones that – so every single rule here was experimented either at the Atlantic League or another league in pro ball, like outside – professional baseball outside of Major League Baseball or like a collegiate level. So if you were the Atlantic League GM, what rule
maybe
would you –
maybe the basis warrant just to kind of have it and settle it down. Or, you know, maybe the pitch, like pitch collect stuff, just to see where you have it set up behind home too, and you have one in center with the time would probably be the two. You know, because I feel like the pitch clock is more for guys when they're people are on base, you know, not for like a nobody on, nobody out situation. Because, you know, you want to get the right pitch in that sequence, you know, especially when people are on base, But, you know, to speed up the game a little bit, I think, you know, you could implement it when there's people on base compared to when nobody's on base.
Okay. All right. So any other notes that I'm missing?
No.
All right. Well, we have Mike Capps, who was the broadcaster of the Round Rock Express on Friday's episode. A happy birthday to Jackson. Turns 21 this week. So Jackson will be celebrating this week, and then we'll have the Mike Capps interview go out on Friday. So busy week here for Bottom Line Baseball.
No, yeah, and we look forward to having Mike tell all different stories about the Express over the past 20 years and what's to be expected for 2021 and beyond. And so we look forward to having that episode come out on Friday.
Absolutely. But for Jackson, I'm Alex Hughes. Thank you all for listening in to this brand new Bottom Line Baseball podcast episode. Be sure to go back and check out our previous interviews with Bob Casas and Dr. Tom House. So again, for Jackson, I'm Alex Hughes. Have a great rest of your Monday, and we will be seeing you on Friday. Have a great week.